7:30. Seven? Is it seven?
Seven.
Seven. Seven. Get there at six if you want to get a seat. All right, and with that, I'll give you Russell. Home, you're welcome, Russell.
Thank you, James. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. How you doing? And I haven't found necessary to have a drink, nor have I had a drink since January 25th, 1981. It's good to be here. This might be a little bit of a different meeting for you. Once in a while, I get serious. I'm not going to get too serious. I'm not going to get too maudlin. But I've been doing these step series things for the last, 20 years, something like that, 25 years. So let me see, I'm about 34 years sober. So I'm 66 years old. I came in when I was 31. We got any guys in their 30s here? Yeah, okay. How about 20s, late 20s? Okay, so I came in, 30 years old, 31 years old. So I've changed a little in many ways, physically and mentally and spiritually in the last 34 years. And I'm not the man today that I was when I was 31 years old. I've got four children that I've raised. They're all adults, and six grandchildren. And I've been married for 34 years, probably the longest relationship I've ever had with a woman. And so I look at life a little bit differently. I've had cancer a couple times and gone through all the stuff you guys go through, or you're going to go through, raising a family, trying to eke out a living, doing all that stuff that we do, all the vagaries of life that we all basically get involved in, the disappointments. Whereas I used to watch ABC Wide World of Sports. And most of you guys are too young to remember that, but we have over here the Ulsters. These are the Obi-Wans over here. But you guys remember the ABC Wild World of Sports, where they used to start it out and they'd say the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat, yeah. and they'd have a guy coming down off of a slalom, a ski jump going about 150 miles per hour, and he would look beautiful, and then at the very end he'd start twisting around like a helicopter and hit a tree. And they would say the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. And that's sort of like the way life is. Life happens. Stuff happens. And it happens to you when you're drinking, right? Good excuse to drink. I never really needed an excuse. Awake was good enough for me, But life continues to happen. Stuff continues to happen. Even if you stop stepping in the dog shit. You know what I mean? Even if you get sober, and you stop stepping in the crap and creating your own problems, life happens anyway, stuff happens anyway. You get into car accidents, the car breaks down, you gotta repair it with money you don't have. Life continues to happen, whether you're good, bad, whether you're sober, whether you're not sober, it just continues to hit you and happens, and you have to deal, and you deal with it, and you deal with it. And I've gone through the whole bit. I've gone through the meetings and everything, so what I try to do at meetings, is I try to give a little bit of a testimony. I think it's like real important to sort of like talk about personal experiences. It says our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, what we like now. So I think it's real important, because then it's just a lecture. You know what I mean? I don't want to get into that. I want to talk a little bit about what's happened to me personally and what the deal is. And you want to try to share as honestly as possible. Of course, I'm sort of selfish and self-centered because I'm an alcoholic. I look at things my way, but I like to think after many years of being in AA, I'm a little bit more objective, I guess, or something like that as to what's happened to me. And at the same time, I've been studying this program. I've been road testing this program. It's one thing to get a book and understand the theory of it and to read the book, but, to read about the third step. It's one thing to read about the third step. To read about trust. It's one thing to read about how you can't manage your own life. It's another thing to live a life that you can't manage. You understand what I'm saying? It's one thing to, anybody ever see the movie The Perfect Storm? You remember that part in The Perfect Storm when they're actually in the storm and the boat's going up that big wave, you know what I'm talking about? Well, you know, it's one thing to watch that in the movie, it's another thing to be in the boat. Wouldn't you agree with me? You know, so you know, it's one thing to go to AA meetings and hear good AA stories and sort of do your AA thing. It's another thing to live 34 years in the boat, you know, with the wife and the kids and all the stuff that's going on, and trying to deal with life while it's coming at you 1,000 miles per hour. Because I don't know if you've realized this, but life doesn't all the time cooperate with you. You know, what you think should happen, or what you think is fair, or what you want to happen, or, you know, all this, sometimes it just doesn't work out that way. You know, maybe sort of like every day. Have you ever noticed that? Like if you're in traffic or something. So I've been dealing with that stuff. And so what I want to impart on you is not only what I see actually has happened to me, what has actually happened to me, but I also want to talk a little bit about the book and the history of AA and try to weave those things together as best I can. Now, in the end, I'm just going to do the best I can trying to tell you the truth of what the deal is, because I was there when it was happening. What you get out of it really has to do with your experience and, quite frankly, not only your perception, but how interested you are in it. And even whatever you get out of it, whatever you hear me say, it still may not make any sense until you actually get in the boat. You're gonna have to do the 34 years, you know what I mean? You know, maybe after 34 years, you know, you'll be one day talking to a group of people and you'll say, you know, and you'll be saying the same thing I'm saying. You know what I mean? And saying, I remember some guys, I didn't understand a word he was talking about, and then I went through it. And a lot of the times, you know, when I give this sort of stuff, and you guys heard it before, you know, I like to have a little fun. I mean, I do, you know, I think we're not a glove lot, you know, I like to joke around a little. And I like to piss people off. I like to confront people. I think it's important, you know, I'm not necessarily, I know love and tolerance is our code, but that wasn't the way my sponsors were always with me, and I'm not that way with some of my sponsees, because I've noticed something. I'm just talking, maybe it's just my sponsees. I've noticed something about alcoholics. When you're nice to them, they don't pay attention. I don't know how to explain it to you. When you hit them over the head with a 2x4 and lock them up in jail for 50 years, they start getting humble and they start asking questions like, what do I need to do? You know, I mean, I'll tell you, when they get hurt, when they get pissed off, when they're walking out of the room and saying, I can't stand that son of a bitch, who does he think he is? When the crap is going over their mind, when you've hurt their feelings, somehow that's when they start really thinking about what's going on, even if you're pissing them off and starting taking things personally. If you start rubbing on the shoulders and say, keep coming back, we love you, and there's a place for that. You know, they just, sometimes they just keep messing up. You know, so I think a little bit of, we call it in religious circles rebuking. Sometimes we've lost the art of rebuking. I would have guys that I had old timers. You may find this hard to believe. I don't even know what they do this anymore. And I would tell them about my problem, and they'd say, why don't you go out and drink? They would say that to me. You know, I mean, I would say, is that legal in AA? Are you supposed to say that? Aren't we supposed to say don't drink and go to meeting? Don't drink unless your ass falls off. You know, whatever you do, don't drink. You know, isn't that what we're supposed to say? You're not supposed to say, why don't you go out and drink? Why don't you get out of here and have a drink? You know, there's a little bit of a disconnect. I'm going to tell you this. There's a little bit of a, it may not be that little. I'll let you be the judge of that. There's a little bit of a disconnect between the wisdom of the fellowship, the wisdom of the rooms. And there is some wisdom in the rooms, but the wisdom of the rooms and the wisdom of the book. There's a little bit of a disconnect. You know, there's a little, because you see, the rooms, you know, are made up of pretty much crazy people. Can we agree on that? I mean, I'm not putting it down, I'm one of them, you know, where it's pretty much made up of groups of people. Hey, some of them have 30 years, some of them have 30 minutes, you know what I mean? Groups of people, some of them want sobriety, some of them want what we have, some of them don't want what we have. Some of them want to do this, some of them don't want to do this. You know, some of them are going to go out and drink again and experiment and don't even want to be here and they're just biding their time. Some of them want what we have, some of them just want what they had. You know, you go through, you're basically, the book describes us. It says we're selfish, we're self-centered, we're driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. We step on toes of others, they retaliate, seemingly without provocations. We make decisions based upon self. I mean, that's an alcoholic. That's the sober alcoholics. We drink because we like the effect produced by alcohol. We're restless, irritable, discontented. We're absolutely crazy. We're insane. We do the same bad, crazy thing over and over again. And that's the qualification for the people in an AA group. And not only that, it says that some of these we balk. We're balking at most of these things. They're counterintuitive. If they came natural, we wouldn't have to go to meetings. They would just sort of naturally do it. We want to try to do it our way. We want to try to sort of sandpaper it down. I mean, this it is a little strident. I mean, go to a meeting every day. I mean, the God thing. I mean, come on. I mean, I appreciate it. It's nice, but come on. You have your God. You have mine. You know what? We do whatever we can to some sort of water this thing down. They can't. First of all, they can't. There is one who has all power. That one is God. You can't manage. Seriously, you can't manage your own life. Seriously, you can't manage your own life. I mean, are they serious? I mean, you know, you can't manage. No human power. No, God couldn't. I mean, you know, it's good, but I mean, what do you do when you got real problems? You know, and you know, you go to a meeting, you complain, or you whine, or you cry. So what you do is you have a group of people that's trying to do the best they can. They're sort of, yeah, and you know, we're rational. I'm a rationalizer. I tell myself rational lies. I mean, I lie to myself. I don't even know I'm lying to myself because I'm crazy. When you're crazy, when you got a crazy mind and you're telling yourself crazy stuff, you don't know you're crazy because you want to something. It feels comfortable to you, makes sense to you. And you want to know something? All the guys you hang out with, they think just like you do. They think just like you do. I mean, that's just the way you see the world. I mean, I've talked about the standard deal. You spend like a day and a half worrying about what your boss thinks about you, worrying about what other people think about you, worrying about what you did and what they think about what you did. And then you say something to yourself like, I don't give a shit what they think about me. You tell yourself that, like, and you like believe it. And then 5 seconds later, you start thinking about what they're thinking about you again. I mean, we're just absolutely, and we're restless, we're irritable, we're discontented. And we listen, all you have to do is listen to the rooms and read the book. You listen to the rooms, they say, you know, I'm spiritual, not religious. You listen to the book, it says a religious idea was brought to Bill Wilson. They weren't scared of religion. It says we lose prayer. You listen to the rooms, they say they put down the Catholic Church, they put down any organized religion. You look at the book, it says we lose prejudice even against organized religion. You know, you read this stuff in the book. The book says one thing, the rooms, you know, the book says don't drink, go to meetings, you know, love and tolerance is our code. The 12 and 12 says we don't argue with people about alcoholism. We say, why don't you go out and try some controlled drinking? Why don't you go out and drink? I mean, they say in the book, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And what has happened is, you know, one of the things that the second step is supposed to be about is supposed to be about open-mindedness. Isn't that right? And the reason it's about open-mindedness is apparently, you know, and this isn't my call, alcoholics tend to be closed-minded. You know, I mean, before you even start, I mean, it's not like they're not skeptics, they're cynics. A skeptic says, well, I don't know, prove it to me, I'm open-minded. A cynic is, you know, you're full of shit. You know what I mean? They're already in the back row saying, I don't even believe I'm listening to this asshole. You know what I mean? Why, you know, I know everything, you know, and then this guy has nothing to tell me. And I mean, you know, when you're talking to a group of alcoholics, you're already trying to walk uphill. You know what I mean? Because they already have you pegged to somebody who's stupid. Yeah, they're already saying things, you know, I should be up there talking to these people. He doesn't understand me. What does he think? You know, so you're already dealing with somebody whose mind is closed. You have a certain idea and perception. And you know how the book says we get a new perception? It doesn't say because Russell talks to us or anything like that. It says 1,000 forms of humiliation and the final question of our self-sufficiency. You know, so I mean, you get arrested, you get divorced, you lose your job, you go out on the street, whatever it is that got you here. You know, it wasn't because somebody came up to you one day and says, you know, I think you're an alcoholic, why don't you try not to, you know, I mean, you can't even, I don't even think you're allowed to say that. I mean, I'm not sure. Are you allowed to say you're an alcoholic? No, you got to say stuff like, you know, the guy's been arrested 25 times for DUI, he's been beating on his wife, he can't show up to work sober. You got to say something like, well, you know, I can't say you're an alcoholic. Nobody can tell you you're an alcoholic. No, I have to plead guilty to the fact that quite often with my sponsees, I say, you are a flaming alcoholic. You are crazy, you know what I mean? I mean, I just tell them, you know, straight out. And what are they gonna do? They're gonna sue, they're gonna fire me? Whatever, you know? And so the bottom line is so I noticed, so what happened is, but here's what the deal is. Light, and then we have this thing called the seventh step, where it talks about humility, and it says humility, whatever that is, I don't got it. You know, you wake up in the morning and think I'll be humble today. You know, humility is absolutely necessary for all these steps. And even further, humility is important as you go on. And apparently humility has something to do with becoming open-minded. And apparently there is a connection with alcoholics between humility, and you ready for this, and humiliation. And I got some good news for you. If you're not open-minded, okay, and you don't have humility, I'm gonna promise you this, life is gonna take care of that. Life will take care of it. You may be doing great now, you may be feeling strong, you know, but I know between the ages of 15 and 31, the only thing I was thinking, I had one central fact in my mind, it had to do with getting laid, you know what I mean? I mean, it was all women. It was all, look at the gal in the front row, look at that blonde, look at this, look at that. Life is gonna help you out. Listen, life's gonna help you out in that area. It's gonna help you out. You're gonna learn a few things. It's gonna be confusing, only for about 15, 20 years. So it'll be confusing for about 20 years. But pretty soon, you know, you get to be my age, 60. Look at these guys. You guys look like you're in your 50s and 60s. You guys aren't confused anymore about that stuff, are you? No, you know, you're not confused, right? Do you remember when you were confused?
Yes.
Yeah, but you understand everything I'm talking about. Because you've been through the deal, right? Okay, so you see these guys over here? These guys that look like they're on their last legs and they got, you know, they're sitting by Kilbert Funeral Home and everything. You know, like nodding their head, they're saying, I know this crap. You know, I've been through it. The 15 marriages, you know, I got the whole deal down. The alimony. I know what the deal is. I ain't chasing after anything these days, you know. I'm just trying to get a good night's sleep, you know, and get to the bathroom on time, you know. It becomes real simple, okay? But you guys, and I know there's some oldsters in there. You younger guys, I know you're sitting there saying, this is a total waste of time. I could be watching the game, you know what I mean? And so you guys are going to have, this is for you guys that think this is a waste of time. You're gonna like this because this for you. This is gonna be like an e-ride in Disney World. You're gonna. I want you to pay attention because you're gonna enjoy this ride. You know what I mean? You're gonna enjoy this ride. And you know the great thing is I don't have to go through it again.
Right.
I don't have to do this deal again. You know I can because I prefer, quite frankly, to be happy. I prefer to be content with the deal. You know, so they're gonna have to prove it to themselves because they don't believe me, but. And so what happened is the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now there's a book called Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, and I'm going to tell you, if I recommended any book for anybody to read, it would be Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. Read it with a yellow pen because Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers specifies exactly what they were doing between like 1935 and 1945. You know, now listen, the big book was written in 1939. And, you know, I've said this before, but bears repeating. It was written in 1939. So the statement, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Thoroughly followed our path was written down in 1939, published in 1939. And they were talking about the path they walked between 1935 June of 35 when it started, and 1939, okay? That's 4 years. 4 years, they were thoroughly, specifically working a program. Not your program, my program, not whatever program you want to work. They were working a program of recovery, which they demanded certain things. There were musts, you had to do it for 4 years. And then they said in the book, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And there were about 100 alcoholics. They debated back and forth. And so, you know, so what happened was we got this big book, which I love. I'm a big book devotee, but it's sort of like, to a certain extent, written by a committee. You know what I mean? A committee. Now, you know, the one thing they say, there's three things they say that people should never see. How laws are made, how sausages are made, and how people stay sober. It's ugly stuff. You know what I mean? But so the big book is sort of like our four-year, written by a committee. And they compromised on a few things. They put in higher power. So, you know, there's a couple things. Whether you want to say they're good or bad or whatever, it doesn't matter. What I want you to do is I want you to read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, because here's the deal. You're entitled to your opinion. Everybody's entitled to their opinion. You're just not entitled to your facts. You're not entitled to your own make-believe facts. So if you read Dr. Bob the Good Old Timer, you're gonna have a really solid idea as to not what you think AA was or what you believe it was, but what they were actually doing. Now, most of the time when I do a meeting like this, I actually bring the book, Dr. Bob the Good Old Timers, because now, so I can read it to you. And I wish I had it here today, I would, you know? And Friday, I'll probably do this same talk and I'll read it, but I don't have it. So I'm gonna have to do it by memory. You're gonna have to, you don't have to trust me, but I'm doing this by memory is what they see, because you, it's important for you to understand what's going on. And the reason it's important for you to understand is because 5 years from now, or 10 years from now, or 15 years from now, if you're still sober and you're miserable, and you may not even know you're miserable, because alcoholics, incredibly enough, although they're sensitive, they can live a miserable life quite purposefully and easily and not change. You know, it's amazing how much pain an alcohol could take and still sort of go through life. You know, yeah, even if they're sober and not move off the spot, you know what I mean? Because it just does, they're just sort of simmering miserable. It's just not, you know, there's this old story about, you know, Zeke and Bob, that, you know, with their dog that were on the porch, the hillbillies, and every once in a while the dog would go, ow, ow, and he said, Zeke would say, what's wrong with your dog? And he says, well, there's a nail right there. And every time he breathes, his, you know, he hits the nail and his chest goes out, he hits the nail and it hurts. He says, well, why does he move? He says, well, it probably doesn't hurt enough. And there's just something about alcoholics, and you can watch them, you can work with them. I've seen it in myself, I've seen it in other people. They will just continue to get divorced. They will continue to have bad relationships. They will continue to maybe even drink. They will continue to complain and whine for 5 years, for 10 years, for 15 years. They'll get sponsors upon sponsors. They'll go to meetings, they'll be told what to do, and usually it's the same thing over and over and over again. They'll even come back and they'll say, this time I'm gonna do it. They'll continue to do it and they just won't do it. They won't do it for whatever reason, because we're sort of arrogant. We're sort of like stubborn. We're sort of, that's the way. Where, you know what they say, the chief, this isn't me, you know what they say in the 12-12? They say the chief characteristic of an alcoholic is defiance. You know, that's like, okay, go over there and to the right, and you say, screw that, I ain't going to the right, I'm going to the left. You know, I mean, don't tell me what to do. That's, if you're an alcoholic, somewhere deep in your mind, you have this tape running saying, don't tell me what to do. Now, who the hell do you think you are? You don't know who you're screwing with, don't tell me what to do. You know, when you're constantly screwing up, and you're constantly screwing up, and you're constantly screwing up, and you need help because you're thinking crazy, and you look for help, but you got this tape going, just don't tell me what to do. It's really gonna jeopardize your situation and really actually doing the right thing if you don't follow directions. Now, it's one thing when you just get out of jail and you're scared you're gonna go away for 10 years, you know, so you follow directions. It's another thing when you get sober for a month or two or three or five or a year or 2 years or 5 years, and now you're sober, you've got a job, maybe you've got a car, you know what I mean? And now it's a whole different story about following directions. Because you're managing your own life, you become complacent. You rest on your laurels and stuff like that. So somewhere down the road, what you're gonna find for many people in Alcoholics Anonymous, you ever read that thing on the sixth step which says, this is the step that separates the men from the boys? We're talking about, listen, you wanna be on the, and I guess the women from the girls, you wanna be on the women men side. You don't wanna be on the girls boys side. You want to be on the rocket in the fourth dimension, experiencing what you have inside. You want to be. You know that thing in the book where it says, what does it say in the, what's that promises thing? It says, we know a new what? A new freedom. A new freedom. How many would like the new freedom? Has anybody ever experienced the new freedom? You know, you might not know what it is because it's new. It's. Have you ever experienced the freedom from thinking? Where you don't think? Some people experience the freedom from thinking. Have you experienced the freedom from worry or anxiety? Have you experienced the freedom about thinking bad thoughts about yourself or other people? Have you stopped with the you know, I'm a piece of shit, I ought to die, some of the other, you know, have you experienced, have you experienced that freedom where you're not concerned about what people know about you or you know, anybody, what they know about you or what's happening? Have you experienced the freedom that no matter how far down the scale you go and see where you can help others, have you experienced that deal? Have you lost fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter? You know, like they say in the book. Are you unconcerned about your little plans, designs, and what's going to happen to you? You don't think about what's going to happen to you. You don't talk about what's going to happen. You don't talk about your life. You know, is your pretty much your chief thought about how you can help other people? You know, if that's what's going on with you. Now that's happened to some of you, right? That has happened because that's a promise. And that does happen to people. That's part of the promises. That's the promises. They talk about it in the book all the time. They're crazy. Alcoholics are crazy about the promises. They talk about them. They read them. People say, yeah, that happened to me. You know, that happened to me. It happened to me, you know, for like an hour. No, everybody gets that stuff. You get that stuff even short term. You say, all of a sudden you hear those promises, man, that happened to me yesterday for 5 minutes. Man, I was feeling great. You know what I mean? And then my wife said this to me, or my boss said that to me, and, you know, I thought my life was over, you know. But so everybody gets these things, you know. Everybody gets a little relief when you're sober, when you're working these things, right? So, you know, so how many people have experienced that entire deal that I just talked about, and even more they talk about it, for, you know, at least an hour? Raise your hand. Okay, we got about seven. How about for where it happened for an entire day? Yeah, about five. How about, yeah, the whole thing, the entire day, not being broken up with the anxiety and I want to kill myself, you know. How about for, how many people have done it for like, had that deal going on for a week? A week. No hand. How about 10 years? Okay, so listen, you want the 10-year deal. You want the 10-year deal. I mean, I'm not saying it's perfect or anything like that, but you want the deal. Where it's all good. You want to deal where the doc says you got cancer and you're having a great day. You don't think that's possible? I know it's possible. I know it's possible in my own life. I know it's possible in other people's lives. I've met the guys. I was there. I've been the witness. I've seen the guys go through unbelievable. I mean, I've seen the alcoholics that can't stop going to discussion meetings or always sucking their thumb-sucking crybabies. I've seen them go through hard times, everything, and I was one of those guys. And I've seen the people that never seem to have any problems at all, and all they do is try to help people, and they're having a glorious life, and they're constructive. People love them; they love to be around them. And you think they got no problems, and that's the way they are. And you find out that they're dying of cancer. I've seen those people too, or terrible things have happened. I've seen those people. You know, who's the gentleman who just died? Great AA speaker. And I don't know why I always forget his name from Tampa. Sandy Beach. I've seen the Sandy Beaches whose daughters were killed and murdered. And all he wants to do is help and love other people. You know, I mean, I've seen the people who have gone through tragedy, you know? It's not the people, you know, I don't long to be like the people that made $1 million and got this, that, and the other thing to have. You know, my whole line was, as long as everything was good in my life, I'd be okay. I want to be those people when bad things happen, you're okay. One of the things the book of the big book was based on, and AA was based on, was something called the Book of James. The Book of James says, rejoice when you have all sorts of trials and tribulations. And man, I'll tell you, when you feel good about yourself and other people, when times aren't good, you got it made in the shade. You know, I want that kind of deal. You want the real good stuff. And this is more than just not drinking. Don't drink and go to meetings is not a program. You know, everybody's not drinking and going to meetings, okay? That's not what separates the men from the boys in the sixth step. And so I want to talk a little bit about that deal because I sponsor guys that have 15 years who got 20 years and are sucking their thumb. Now, you don't see it because they don't talk about it. They sort of know how to do the AA rap. They know how to do the deal. You know what I mean? And I understand that, you know? But the bottom line is I know guys that don't have their stuff together and they're not doing well, and they're not happy. They're, you know, like the big book says, now and then a serious drinker being dry at the moment, doesn't even say whether he has 6 months or 16 years, and being dry at the moment says, I feel better, I look better, I'm having a better time, we smile, says Sally, we know, this is a vision for you, we know he will soon pick up the drink again because he's not happy with his sobriety. You know, it's one thing to be sober, it's another thing to be happy with your sobriety. And that's what I want for you. You know, I want for you, you know what it says in the big book? It says, we've experienced much of heaven, and we've been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence of which we have not even dreamed. Now, I want you to listen to those words. They could have said this. Well, things are better now. They could have said this. I've heard this. We're hanging in there. You know, how you doing? Hanging in there. I'm 14, 20 years going to meetings. How you doing? I'm hanging in there. Oh, wow. Sign me up for that program. You know what I mean? The hanging in there program. One slipping day at a time, you know? They could have said that. They didn't say that. They chose the words. They said, we've been rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence, and we're experiencing much of heaven. Now, if you have not been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, if you are not experiencing on a daily, hourly basis much of heaven, then let me tell you something. I'm just going to tell you the truth. You can hang from. You don't have what they got. You don't have it. You don't have it yet. Doesn't mean you can't get it. Doesn't mean you can't have it tomorrow or the next day. You don't have it. It ain't happening for you. And if you're an alcoholic, like I'm an alcoholic, you may want to want that deal. You know what they say? If you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. You're not even ready unless you want that deal. You just want to get the money or get the gal or get back in the big bed or stuff like that, and you'll be satisfied. You're getting out of here. You know, you don't want that deal. That's okay. Don't worry about it. You won't get it. It ain't going to happen for you, okay? So let me just sort of tell you what the deal is for me and what the deal is in the book. If you read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, it says something. Now, so I don't shock you. And I know you're not going to be shocked when I say this because some of you have heard my rap before. One of the things that I've ultimately realized after 34 years of sobriety is we can talk about the steps and we can talk about the history and we can talk about everything, but the only thing that ends up being important is your relationship with God. It's a God thing. God either is or he isn't. What is your decision going to be? You know, that's what it says. There's one chapter to the atheists and agnostics, you know, and the chapter says this sort of thinking has to be abandoned. You know, you got to get over it. You know, the book says we got to get rid of the selfishness. It must if it kills us. God makes that possible. It says, you know, see to it your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. There's all sorts of quotes there. You know, in that one part where it says we've experienced much heaven, we've been rocking up, it says the great fact is this and nothing less, that he has become the central fact of our lives. Not the gals, not the car, not the money. It's all about God. We have, you ready? You know what it says? It says we have the absolute certainty that he lives in our hearts. He is doing for us what we can't do for us. You know those promises? You know how they end up? They say, we finally realize that he, God, is doing for us what we can't do for ourselves. You know what it says? When we stop playing God and we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things happen. They're talking about the stuff I'm talking about. Being all powerful. It ain't the doorknob, because the doorknob ain't all powerful. It ain't the tree. The tree ain't all powerful. Being all powerful, he gives us everything we need if we stay close to him and perform his work. Well, all you got to do is stay close to him. You don't know who he is? Well, you know, you got a problem. You better figure that out and perform his work well. What work are you supposed to perform? You better figure that out. This ain't Russell's program. This isn't, you know, I'm not going to buy his crack. This is the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't care what they tell you in the rooms. You can believe the big book, or you can get what you see in the room. If you want what they have in the rooms, you look around the rooms sometimes. You look around the people. If that's the sobriety you want, what's going on in the rooms, then go ahead and go for it. If you want the Bill and the Dr. Bob sobriety, then you ought to read what's in the book. You ought to look at that stuff, you know? And that's the deal. It says all sorts of remarkable things happen. Being all powerful gives us everything we need if we stay close to him and perform his work well. We lose concerns about our little plans and designs. We stop being concerned about other people. We lose fear today. We sense his presence in our life all the time. What do you think that probably feels like? If you sense the presence of God, you probably get rid of that loneliness. When you're focusing on him, you're probably not focusing on her. When you're focused on him, you're not focusing on the guy. You're not focusing on your weight. You're not focusing on vanity stuff. You're focusing on him. You're not focusing on your bank account. You're focusing on him. You're not comparing yourself to other people because you're focusing on him because he's sanctified. He says, we lose all fear today and tomorrow and hereafter. We are reborn. That's what it says. Hey, listen, I'm just quoting stuff out of the book. It says, we thought well before taking these steps, making sure that we are ready to turn our lives. Oh, what's the word they use? I love the word they use. This is what they say in the big book. I mean, if you think I'm strident, what they say in the big book, it says this is the terminology they use in step three. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to Him. I love that word, utterly. It's not used much in the English language, but I know what it means. I know what utterly means. It means utterly. It means without reservation. You know, James, the book of James, what they used to get in there, you know, where they took all this stuff, some it said, but you can have no doubt. No doubt. The doubting man is like, he says, they call him the double-minded man. He'll receive nothing. He'll receive nothing, the double-minded man. You know what it says in the book? It says, unless you get rid of these old ideas, the results were nil. You receive nothing. Now, of course, we're alcoholics, right? So as alcoholics, we want to rationalize. We want to tell ourselves rational lies. You say, well, that's kind of fanatical and ridiculous, because we want to compromise. We want to say, hey, look, it's just progress, not perfection, which in a sense it is. So we want to say, well, of course you receive something. I've received something. So you sort of rationalize the whole thing. You don't strive for perfection or anything like that. And what happens, but then you get into that sixth step, that thing that separates the men from the boys, where it talks about the man who repeatedly tries this step to grow and tries to grow in the image and likeness of Creator. He becomes the man. And, you know, that's the deal. You strive for perfection. What's that all about? Is that sitting on your ass and talking bad things about the Catholic Church? I mean, at AA meetings or being pissed off? What is that? What's that striving for perfection look like? So I'm just going to tell you sort of like some of the things that happened to me and what I've noticed over the years, how it's worked out with me. I talk a lot about my faith. Listen, you don't have to do my deal. You don't have to be me. I'm not here to proselytize or anything like that. As a matter of fact, it's totally against my deal to push my faith or anything on anybody. Okay, but I expose, because part of the becoming transparent and telling your story is to expose what happened to you. Or else you're not, otherwise you're talking about crap. You're not really telling what the real nuts and bolts are and what's going on. When you read the Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, because the one thing they weren't doing in the first 4 years was, what does it say? Rarely have I seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Does it say thoroughly? It uses the word thoroughly, right? It doesn't say half-ass or do whatever the hell you want. You know, doesn't it say half? What does it say about half measures? A veil does nothing. It does not. Not even. Listen, don't look at me like I'm a fanatic. These guys were the crazy ones. You know what I mean? It's Dr. Bob who said, if you're an atheist, agnostic, or have some other sort of intellectual pride that keeps you away from this, say, I feel sorry for you. Your heavenly Father will never let you down. I didn't. That's what Dr. Bob said. You know, it's Bill Wilson who said when Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, the guy, the man on the bed. You ever see that picture of the man on the bed and Dr. Bob and Bill are there and Bill has the Bible open? You know what the name of that picture is? A lot of people think it's man on the bed. It's not that. It's Came to Believe. Came to Believe. It's that guy who said, I knew there was something more, something I hadn't got, something that a person ought to have. I knew they had a relief. He could see I was sober, but they had something more. They were being rocked in the fourth dimension. I knew there was something more, something I hadn't got. And Bill said, sitting in my kitchen with my wife, turned to my wife and said, he said, Henrietta, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I got to keep talking about it and telling other people. And he said, I finally got it. I got it. I was only a few weeks sober, but I got it. He says, Bill was very, very grateful. And he was absolutely sure and positive. He gave all credit to God. And he had to tell other people about that. He says, that's been the golden text for me. He got it. He got it. He figured it was all about God. It was all about a relationship with God. Oh, isn't that funny? After we do all these steps, which are merely tools, I think the 11th step has something to do with now having a relationship with God. Does it say something like having a relationship with God? We try to improve our conscious consciousness. So it's all about, all those steps ultimately lead to what? A relationship with God, which we are constantly trying to get closer to. Isn't that what the 11th? And then we carry that message to other people. We carry that message to other people. That's what the deal is all about. So you read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. And you read a part, I think it's on page 100, where they talk about what you have to do in order to go to AA. And they talk about something called the surrender. And they say it was absolutely necessary, and I wish I had the book right here so I could read it to you. You got to go read it. I'll probably read it Friday night. And this is what they say. He said, you had to get down on your knees and give your life to God. You had to get down on your knees and give your life to God. They wouldn't let you in the meeting. You had to do it in the hospital. If you didn't, if you got away without doing it in the hospital, you had to do it in a meeting in front of people on the upstairs, and then you could go down to the meeting. And she talks about, the gal who wrote about it, we'd be sitting there and we'd see all the men troop down with the new guy, and they'd say we had a real surrender. It was a must. You had to do it. You couldn't get into a meeting. Hey, so much for steps 2 and 3, huh? So much for, well, I don't know whether I believe in God, and I don't know whether I want to do it, and you know, well, you have your deal and I have my deal. You know, they tell you, you want to go to the meeting, you get down on your knees in front of all of us and you give your life to God. Now, there may have been guys who said, well, screw you, I'm leaving. I don't know where they were going, you know what I mean? I have no idea where they were going. They may have made it back or crawled back with a different attitude, but I got to tell you one thing. I'll bet the meetings were a little more serious and a little more focused. Didn't have a lot of crap going on. You know, these guys were serious. You know, AA's like a big deal now. I mean, people are making billions of dollars. They got all sorts of hospital programs. They got the doctors involved. Man, they got the pharmaceutical companies making billions off of us, you know. You're feeling a little depressed? Forget about the 4 steps. Suck on this thing, you know. Suck on this pill. It's brain chemistry and shit. You know what I mean? And, you know, get addicted to this crap so you can't live your life. Better living through chemistry, you know. And they got this thing all day. Once they figure out they can make money on it, man, Katie barred the door. You know, that's it, buddy, you know. You will be their guinea pigs forever. Forever. Forget this God stuff. Let's just talk about the next pill. The next, the thing they discover. Man, I can't tell you the people I've sponsored that are addicted to the doctor-prescribed pills and the booze and how they do and what's going on in their life. You can't, man, the brains are fried. And I'm not putting down all medication. There's some people that are necessary, but boy, you talk about over-prescription. You know, because you know something? I'll tell you something. When a guy goes up to a doctor and says, I'm depressed and I'm not feeling well and does all that crap, you know something? And he says, well, I think you got some sort of depression problem and, you know, take this pill. That's exactly, those symptoms are the same symptoms a person has when he doesn't do his 4th and 5th step. Did you hear what I just said? When an alcoholic is depressed and not feeling well and is restless and irritable, discontented, that's the same symptoms an alcoholic has that's not working the program of recovery, the spiritual program of recovery. You realize that? If you go to your AA sponsor, you might say, why don't you go out and drink? Why don't you do your damn 4-step? Why don't you go out and help others? If you go to a doctor, he'll say, I'm going to write you out a script. You with me? This is what we call MS. This is the truth. Okay? And we all know it happens in here. Doesn't mean all medications are bad or anything. It's just be careful with who you allow to experiment with your life and turn you into their guinea pig. You know? Be careful with that deal. So in the 12 of the what you end up seeing is there was a real surrender. A surrender to God. A surrender to God. Now here's what I've noticed in my life. What I noticed in my life. You know, we have the second step. Anybody seen the second step? What was it? What is it? It came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. It's like we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us. It like happens over a period of time, right? Right? Okay. And then we have this third step where you get down on your knees and you say the prayer, the 3rd step prayer, you know, by God, whatever the heck you say. And, you know, in private, not in front of people, you know, maybe in your bathroom or something like that. And that's the 3rd step, okay? And here, I'm going to tell you something that's crazy. And this is just something I noticed after looking at this thing for 34 years. I'm going to tell you the craziest thing in the world. Now, you understand that which step comes first, the 2nd or the 3rd step? This is not a trick question. Which step comes first, the 2nd or 3rd step? Okay, so let me tell you what the deal is, what I've noticed about in my life. Now, I know the 2nd step comes before the 3rd step, okay? And the 3rd step, where you make a decision to turn your will and your life over to God and you get on your knees, that happens in a minute. It takes a minute, right? Second step takes a little bit longer, but the third step happens like you just get down. It doesn't take long to say the prayer or anything like that. Now, let me tell you what the deal is, what I found the deal is. The third step may only take a minute. The second step takes a lifetime. The second step takes a lifetime. The coming to believe, the absolute certainty, the utterly thing. You can't manage your own life. No human power, only God could and would if you were sought. That crap, that takes 20, 30 years of being pounded. Listen, here's what happened. One day when I had about 6 months, you know, after holding hands and the groups, saying the Lord's Prayer, saying the Serenity Prayer, doing the stuff, reading the books, doing what my sponsor told me to do, ask God's help every day to stay sober, you know, so I got used to the deal. I felt comfortable with the God thing, and it was working for me. After saying the Serenity Prayer 10 million times, you know what I mean, and all that sort of stuff, where it didn't seem like a big deal. I was swimming in that pool, you know. I was no longer in the bars with the guys saying, oh, that's a bunch of bullshit, and all the other guys were doing it. It was okay. I could do it. I still had to force myself. I got down on my knees. And I did it because I wanted to be part of the club and I wanted to move on and I wanted what they had and I was willing to do it and I did it. And I said the prayer. I said the third step prayer. I might have even sincerely kind of believed it, you know, as I was doing it. You with me? Just like you did. And then I got up, you know what I mean? I had thrown in the towel. And then I got up and you know what I did? I ripped that towel right back. And I've spent the next 20 years giving them strips, ripping off strips, saying maybe that'll satisfy him. Because I sure as hell wasn't going to leave my financial life up to God. And I sure as hell wasn't going to live my sex life up to God or any of my other stuff. Because I know we can't manage our own lives. But, you know, if I don't manage it, who's going to manage it? You understand what I'm like, you're going to manage it? I mean, like God's going to manage it? I mean, I know we can't manage our own lives. But let's face it, I'm taking over from here. You know, God is definitely my co-pilot. You know what I mean? I am the pilot. He is the co-pilot. I know the book says we got to keep playing God, but really, I mean, seriously, you know what I mean? And wait, I'm going to let him drive the car. I'm driving the car. He's the co-pilot. As a matter of fact, but the co-pilot, he can sit in the back. I'll chauffeur him around, okay? I'm calling the deal. And now, you ready for this? Here's what the A, B, and C says. It says, we're alcoholic and we can't manage our own lives. No human power could relieve their alcoholism. God could and would if he were sought. And then right after that it says, being convinced that we can't manage our own lives. First of all, we got to quit playing God. Convinced that it's all about God. We focus on God. He's the central part of our life. God is everything. We are nothing. He either is or he isn't. He's either everything or convinced. Utterly turn it over, not turn it. You know what that sounds? That sounds like a little ISIS, like a little crazy. You know, it's like we're Americans. And plus we're alcoholics, so we got fear running through our lives. We're scared shitless. And you know, if you're scared, you know that means, well, and we have a right to be scared because it's scary out there, right? So that means in order so you don't get hurt, you got to have what? You got to have control. You got to be in charge. You got to know everything. You got to push people around. You got to make the phone call. You got to send the email. You got to make sure you do something because if you don't, you won't get the money or somebody's going to hurt you or something's going to happen, you know, and very often it does and you do this and they do that and you got to, I mean, this AA stuff is good, but not really for life. You know what I'm talking about? And then you find like you're 2 years or 3 years sober and you're sort of miserable and bad things are happening. You don't know why. And you know, you fight, you know, listen, I fought the law and the law won. You know that song? I fought the world and the world won. I did the hand-to-hand combat with the planet Earth, with the jobs and the kids and the everything, trying to make everything turn out okay for 20 years and got the crap beat out of me and found myself in AA meetings complaining and whining and complaining and feeling sorry for myself sober. You know what I mean? Because things didn't often, no matter what I did, they would fall apart. It wouldn't work out. I know that deal. I know that game. While I was reciting the stuff in the book, There Is One Who Has All Power, while I was reciting You Can't Manage Your Own Life, I mean, you can say the words, but whether you do it or not, there's a whole different, listen, you could say you can't manage your own life, no human power, only God could and would if you saw it, turn your life completely over to him, utterly, you know, he's either everything or he's nothing, see the relationship with him is right, a great event will come past you and countless others, sincerely make that decision, stop playing God, do all, you can do all that stuff, But once you get in your car and you leave your AA room, and once you say, well, that was a great talk, I really like that Russell guy, and you leave the A room, and then you go into work the next day, or somebody calls up and says, you got to do this, or you get that letter from the IRS, that's when the rubber meets the road. Then we find out whether you really believe in God. Or, and you know what happened? What I found out, what happened to me? It's not bad or good, it's just the way it is. It's just a deal. That's why the seventh step says the way we get a new perspective, the way we learn this stuff, the way we really come to believe, is through 1,000 forms of humiliation, the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. I have to give this credit to Tom Cruise. I was, you know, because you know what happens when you're on the spiritual road, you see it everywhere. I was watching him on Entertainment Tonight one time. You know, God, he's a good-looking guy, sharp guy. I mean, and they said to him, he says, you know, you got everything. You're the top actor. You're handsome. You got everything. He says, how do you stay humble? Because he seems like a, you know, not an arrogant guy. How do you stay humble? And he looked at the camera and he did one of these and he says, life is a humbling experience. Life is a humbling experience. It'll knock your ass. It doesn't care who you are. You could be Bill Clinton. You could be a top politician. You could be a movie star. Life has a way of coming around and just cutting your legs out from under you. You know, it's just the bigger they are, the harder they fall. You know, it just has a way of doing that to you. And when it does it to you, you learn. And you learn the hard way. You know what I mean? And I learned the hard way. I learned through the being broke and the worried about money and trying to support a wife and four kids with $50 in the bank. I learned the hard way. You know, you can't dream money into your account if it's not there. You know, you can't dream stuff. You have to. At 3 o'clock in the morning, the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous was not in my bed with me while my mind was going a million miles per hour, worrying about how I was not going to have my house foreclosed on. They couldn't help me with that. They weren't there. When Ray O'Keefe said to me, I said, when am I going to have financial security? Because 90% of people in AA are worried about the money deal. I mean, not that it's support, it's just right up there with oxygen. You know, when Ray O'Keefe said, when I said to Ray O'Keefe, when am I going to get that promise? You know, the promise. Isn't there a promise? We lose financial insecurity. Is there a promise we lose financial insecurity? When I said, when am I, feel? Yeah, that's what he said. He said, it doesn't say that. I said, yeah, it says that. He says, read. He says, we lose fear, financial insecurity. He says, you see, you'll always be broke. It just won't bother you. How do you do the just won't bother you thing? How do you do the just won't bother you thing? I'll tell you, the only way you do the just won't bother you is because instead of looking at your bank account, you're looking at God and you say, I know it's going to all work out. Even if I have to move in, the Lord's going to take care of me. You better have one hell of an abiding face. At 3 o'clock in the morning, the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous ain't going to be there, but you sure as hell don't want to be there all by yourself. You know, this gives you a faith that works in rough times. You don't want to be there all by yourself. There's just so many TV shows late at night you can watch. There's so much music, only so much music you listen to. You can spend only so much time on the computer to distract you from the worldly clamors that are trying to kill you. You better have some sort of faith in God that you trust, that's your higher power, that's a higher power that can handle anything, that you know no matter what happens, it's all going to work out because you're going to turn it over to Him. And you're just going to do the best job you have. You better develop some sort of faith because this world is tough. And if you haven't learned that by now, you just have another 20, 30 years. And so what happened is, you know, they say in the Bible, they say, and they say it in the big book, you can't do the God and Mammon thing. You can't compromise on it. There's no, that's why the big book, it's all in the big book. It says we got to get rid of these old ideas. The result was nil until we let go absolutely. God is everything or nothing. We must get rid of this selfishness. God makes that possible. It's all through the big book. Focus only on Him. It's all through the 12 and 12. It's what they were doing when they did the complete surrender then. And do we do it perfectly? No, we don't do it perfectly. But that's why we grow in the 11th step more and more and more. You know, and what happened? So what happened with me? I came in to Alcoholics Anonymous in love with the world. Remember what Bill Wilson says? Worldly clamors. You know, remember what he said? But soon worldly clamors took me away. Worldly clamors will kill you. Out there are worldly clamors. Out there is the IRS. Out there is your boss. Out there is your job. Out there is the poorhouse. Out there is everything. Out there is the billboard saying breast enlargement. Out there is the Viagra. Out there is the TV. Out there is everything you think you need in order to be a self-sufficient human being that you've been chasing after, and it's been killing you, and it's never worked, and you're still chasing after it because they do a good job of advertising, because like the pharmaceutical companies, they make a lot of money. You know, and let me tell you something, it ain't gonna change. It ain't gonna change. Well, in your lifetime, it's going to get worse. It's going to be on the internet and everything like that. And it's out there. It's out there to kill you, to kill you. And you're, and you know, some of you're an alcoholic like me. You're addicted not only to alcohol. You're addicted to him. You're addicted to her. You're addicted to it. You say things to yourself like, "I need that blouse." You say things to yourself like, "I need that car." You say it. You believe it. I need that job. I need that car. I need this. You are so needy. If you're like me, you are so needy to be a human being and even think good about yourself. You need so much stuff. Just to have on your side along with you, because I was a nothing. I was always going to be a nothing. I was never going to be nothing but a nothing. I used to put something in my body, I'd be an almost. When you're nothing, almost is top of the world. I needed that gal. You know, listen, you know what's the worst thing for an alcoholic? Being alone on a Saturday night. You give me a good-looking blonde man, I'm on top of the world. You give me a car, I'm on top of the world. You give me booze, man, I'm not only addicted to booze, I'm addicted to all the other stuff. Booze just worked faster than the other stuff. And all that other stuff you get hangovers from that stuff too. You know, you can get a hangover from that stuff. You know, and they start taking that stuff away. Hey, listen, if you're happy when you have a gal, guys, then what happens when you don't have her? If you're happy when your wife is treating you nice, then what happens when she's not treating you nice? You know, Bill Wilson said, you know, if you're happy when you have money, then what happens when you don't have money? Then your life becomes totally dependent, your inner life and who you are and what becomes totally dependent to your circumstances, and you have no control over your circumstances. None, zero. You could be fired tomorrow, you get a car accident tomorrow. I have a good friend of mine who just had a stroke out of the blue. You know what I mean? You don't know whether you're going to get home tonight alive. You better base it on something else. And we're addicted to that stuff. All we do is think about that stuff. You go to discussion meetings, you know what they talk about? You know what they talk about discussion meetings? The stuff. They talk about losing the stuff, or they're not going to get the stuff, or they didn't get the stuff. They talk about the stuff. It's all about the stuff. So what happens is, after I took that third step, so I came in here addicted to the world. Addicted to the world. Thinking about the world all the time. So they got me on my knees. I said the Lord's Prayer. I go to meetings. And so while I was doing that and talking to people and everything like that, for 5% of the time, I wouldn't be addicted to the world. I'd be addicted to the world, and 5% of the time, or 10% of the time, I'd be thinking about God. You with me? Now that actually gets you a little somewhere. You know what I mean? It's better to be thinking about God at least 5% of the time. You know, it takes your mind off the booze, you know, and stuff like that. But what happens is, as time went on, you can't do the world and the God thing at the same time. It sort of screws you. You don't get a lot of pleasure out, because it's tough to do the A thing and the God thing and the on your knees and then do the world thing. The God thing and the world thing. The God thing and the world thing. And somehow, some way, the world thing is always trying to snatch away the God thing. It always, as a matter of fact, as you get weller, all of a sudden you start hearing things today like says, "I can't go, I can't do that, I gotta go to work." All of a sudden work, where your boss, who could give a crap about you, you know, he'll say things like, "Well, I'm sorry, you're going to have to miss your anniversary, you know what I mean, because you got to work today. You're going to have to miss your son's baseball game because you got to work today." And we all got to work. And of course, we'll drop our wives, we'll drop our kids, we'll drop our sobriety, we'll do anything to keep the job, because if I don't have the job, I'm going to die and terrible things are going to happen, okay? But you start going to aim, they talk about the God thing, it's like, you know, it's not that big a deal. The boss is more important. You understand? And it's very, very hard to get out of that idea that if you just follow God, he's going to take care of you. It's very hard. It's like fairy tale stuff. You know what I mean? And yet what happens is, you go along, you see people in AA that are happier and happier and seem to have release. And they're the people that always seem to be talking about God, focused on God, seem to have some sort of, and you know, they're not starving. Some of them have money. They have nice car. You know what I mean? And they're just focused on a different deal. They're just walking on a different deal. And so what happens is, as you go along trying to do both things, But both things, you know, do a little bit of the God thing here, a little bit of the other thing here, the God thing here, the other thing here, you know, the world thing here. What I noticed is I was still miserable. Not sort of miserable the way we were before came in here, just a lighter sort of like a simmering sort of, you know, things weren't, I didn't have the release. How can you have the release when you spend most of the time worrying about what people think about you and worrying about the world and what's going to happen to you? How can you have a release when you're so tied into the world? And what happens is you work this thing, as it hits you. What happened to me, you know, and I don't take any credit for it, I'm just blessed because it happened. I became, one day when I was 15 years sober, I mean, I just became more, it's that 11-step thing. I became more and more tied into the God thing, going to more and more meetings talking about God. The people I hung out with talked about God. When you're hanging around people that are talking about money, you know what you do? You walk away thinking about money. When you hang around guys and they're talking about gals, you know what you do? You walk away thinking about girls. When you hang around guys talking about sports, you walk away thinking about, when you hang around people and they're talking about God, you know what happens? You walk away thinking about God. That's why probably in the big book, not in AA, not in the fellowship, but in the big book, they encourage church membership. They encourage you hanging around with people that are focused on God. And what happened is when I was 15 years sober, I started going to a Bible study. And I had to be almost forced to do that because I was scared to do that. And I did that. So then I met a whole other group of people that weren't necessarily alcoholics. I met my new sponsor. He's got 58 years, new sponsor. My sponsor for 15 years. He had 58 years. Met him in a Bible study. You know what those guys talk about? They talk about God. You know what they read? They read the same stuff that the guys are reading, who the first 100 guys that wrote the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. The books that they found absolutely essential, 1 Corinthians 13, Book of James, and Sermon on the Mount. All they do is study that stuff. So as I made more and more friends that way, I started talking more about, you know, people say, and so what do? I do this stuff. This is my life. I do this stuff. The Lord's been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I got to keep talking about it and telling other people. And what I've learned is more and more, the more I start focusing on God, the more I get involved in the God, the less I am concerned with my life. The less I am concerned with my life. Now, don't get me wrong. I ain't looking to run out in the street and kill myself. You know what I mean? Somehow, some way, when you focus on God and you get this God thing down, you manage to be able to go to the bathroom, eat dinner, go to work, and do all the stuff that normal people do. You just do it without the anxiety. And life without the anxiety is a cool deal. You know, it's like? I was trying to explain to this the other day, and I wish I'd come up with a better explanation. It's like life for me is like going to the movies. Anybody ever go to the movies? It's like you can be involved in the movie, but you're not like in the movie. You can be in the world and not of the world. You know, I think Jesus said, he said, in this world you will have trouble, you will have problems, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. It's like watching stuff go happen, watching your wife do stuff, watching people do stuff, watching even tragedy and stuff, and you can get involved in it, you can look at it, you can see it, and you laugh at it, but you don't take it you're not focused on it. It's not that you don't know what's going on, you're not as self-absorbed. Isn't it says selfishness, self-centeredness, that's right. You're not filled with self-pity or fear or anything because you're focused. You have another, because the central fact is this and nothing, because the great fact is this and nothing less. He becomes the central fact in your life. You know, if God is for us, who can be against us? You're focusing on him. And so what happened is, and listen, I'm not perfect. Nobody gets perfect. It's all progress, not perfection. You know, so now maybe I'm, so somebody asked me the other day, because I do a lot of the speaking stuff, and what do I speak about? I speak about God. I come here, I speak about God. You know, that's all I speak about. I mean, I don't apologize for it. You know, the big book says we're on a new basis. The trusting of God. We trust in God. We never apologize for God. We never apologize for God. It's right in the big book. It says right here. And then I'm going to close up and not even open. I'm going to say it says here. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. Why wouldn't I talk about this? This is Alcoholics Anonymous. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so, for we are now on a different basis. The basis of trusting and relying upon God. You know, some guys came up to me and he said, you know, you talk too much about God, you know, maybe you should cool it down on God, you know, talk a lot about God. Some people don't want to hear about the God thing. And I said, you know what I said to him? I said, well, if that's true, then I guess they'll stop inviting me to do step series. But the problem is they just keep on inviting me to do more and more. So apparently there are some people that want to hear this stuff. They want the real deal. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We're in the world to play the role he assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us, and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is a way of weakness, paradoxically is a way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate to us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. How would you like to outgrow fear and anxiety? How would you like to be able to sleep at night? How would you like to be able to wake up in the morning without having fear and anxiety? How would you like to get rid of that stuff forever and be rocking in the fourth dimension of existence? Do you really want to just be hanging in there? Man, why would you go to the banquet and walk away with a ham sandwich when you can have lobster and filet mignon and all that sort of stuff? And it's available to you. And all you have to do is take this thing seriously. And as time goes by, you know, people say to me, when do you have time to do all this stuff? I said, I don't play golf. I mean, I'm not putting down playing golf. I can play golf, but I mean, you know, I play golf. I'd spend 4 hours on the golf course, 2 hours afterwards, 2 hours before, go fishing, all that sort of stuff. I don't do that. Doesn't mean you can't do that. Doesn't mean I can't do with it. We all have tons of time. What you do with your time and who you hang out with is going to have a great deal to do with what your thought life is. What your thought life is going to have a great deal to do with whether or not your mind, you're going to have that psychic change and your mind's going to be transformed. Don't kid yourself. You can't hang around with the people you hang out with and hang around in the world and be in the world and be doing that stuff and expect to get, you know, out of this deal, you know, the same thing. You can't do the same thing over and over again and expect different results. If you're feeding your mind and you're feeding yourself and you're hanging out with the same people and doing the same stuff, you're going to get the same results. You may be able to stay away from the drink. You're not going to be able to stay away from the think. And the only reason you go to A meetings right now is not because of the drink. You may tell yourself that it's because of the think. It's because of what's going on in your mind. You know, and so that's the thing that I wanted to share. It's not funny games tonight, you know? I want to share that it is important. It is all, that's the deal that we're involved in here. That's what the steps are all about. The steps are all about, they're not just, a lot of people like worship the steps, you know, they worship like they think it's a, no, the steps, the whole point of the steps is to point you towards God, to commit you to God, and to come to believe so that you become convinced that that's the deal. And then life starts getting really good. And I'll tell you, with me, it was like 15, 20 years. I know people don't like what. Listen, I'm not saying it was all bad. It was good stuff, and it gets better and better. But I'm saying this thing, if I said 9 years sober, I'm sucking my thumb. Doing step meetings, doing this stuff. It takes a lot of being beat up, a lot of experience in life, a lot of going back to God, a lot of getting down on your knees. There were a lot of my getting down on my knees, a lot of 3 o'clock in the morning, a lot of reading the big book, a lot of praying to God after I did my initial third step. You understand what I'm saying? For me to finally get to a lot of spending weeks turning it over. I got to turn this over. It would take me 5 days, a week to turn it over because I'd have to whine and cry about it first to everybody in the world before I could turn it over. You know what I mean? It takes a long time and a lot of practice in doing this thing before I found myself, I wasn't turning it over, because it was already turned over. You want to live a turned over life. You don't have to turn over your wife anymore. You don't have to turn over your boss anymore. You know, he says things, you don't have to turn over the traffic because you woke up, it's already turned. You've turned the world over already. You understand what I'm saying? And you're ready for it, you know, because you're focused on him. And whatever he brings into your life, you know it's going to all be good, no matter what. And it's there for a purpose. What doesn't kill you make you stronger. Okay, so thank you very much. God bless you.
I asked a friend to come up and do the chips.
Good evening, family. I'm Kyle and I'm Floyd.
Hey, Kyle.
Here in AA, we have a colorful chip system to denote clean hunt.